my travels around the world on every continent for the past 30 years, a question that often arises is, why are there so many religions, so many spiritual books, so many spiritual teachers? Why? Wouldn't it be easier if there was just one choice? Then we wouldn't have to be confused or bewildered or just mesmerized into inactivity because there's so many choices. Maybe just better not to choose at all. You begin to think that, well, if I were born in one place, they would say my religion is such and such. And then if I were born in another place, I could have been brought up in another religion. So is there any point to it all? Does it all depend on where you were born? Does it all depend on whether a missionary from this religion or that religion came to your area? Why? So many religions. What's the point? It would seem that if God knew what he were doing, he would just have one religion. So either God has screwed things up, or human beings have screwed things up. Or both. So, let us discuss. The reason why there is confusion about religion is because people don't know what the goal of religion is. Often, people think the goal of religion is to believe. This lack of clarity has caused problems. It's like saying the goal of religion is to have an appropriate religious belief sitting on your head, then everything is all right. If you believe in a certain way, then you're okay, depending on which part of the world you live in and which group you're associated with. You see, religion can be used just like ethnic identification, or another way of saying is just like the particular brand of clothes that you wear. Some people feel very proud wearing a Calvin Klein shirt. Others feel very proud wearing some other brand, Gap or whatever is popular. Similarly, we can label ourselves with a religious designation. I am this. I am this ism. I am that ism. And in this way, we get a sense of belonging. Because so many people want something which is known as social coordination. They want to feel part of a bigger picture. So they stamp themselves with a certain religious label. And that way, they feel like I'm part of the bigger picture. It's not just my family and I, it's my whole religious group. I'm identifying with that group. This stamping yourself, branding yourself, like cowboys would brand cattle, this branding of yourself, take the brand and you sear it into your skin, and then when you change religions, you wonder, what are you going to do about the brand, the tattoo? This branding gives you some material identification. It's material because you don't know what is the goal of religion, but you're eager just to belong to a certain group and to have a certain belief that makes you feel like you're a good member of society. Because people do not know what is the goal of religion, there's so much religious strife. And then naturally, those persons who are frustrated by there being so many religions and by there being religious strife, they say, just see, what is the use of religion? What does it do? It actually causes more wars than anything else. Because religion in some parts of the world causes conflict, we should ban religion, or there should be no religion. That's like saying, because there are auto accidents, we should ban cars. You say, no, no, it's not that cars simply crash. They give us benefits. They take us from point A to B with convenience. So it's simply that we should clean up the roads from drunken drivers or reckless drivers. But cars should go on. Yes. So similarly, I say, we should clean up the road of confused religious thinking and let real religion motor on. As long as people think that religion is an identification, a social identification, material identification, like wearing a certain brand of clothes, then you'll never understand what is the goal of life and what's the purpose of religion. Please, once again, understand the problem. People stamp themselves. I am Christian, I am Hindu, I am Muslim, I am Jewish. And they don't know what the goal of religion is. Therefore, their religious efforts don't get them very far. And so other people can criticize. Just see, has the world really changed that much because people believe in religions? Has it really made a difference? Especially since so-called religious people often are very warlike and they fight. Let us think deeply about this situation. What is the goal of real religion? Very simple. And this will help you in your evaluation. The goal of religion is to love God. Once we forget about loving the Supreme, then religion just becomes an ethnic identification. It's useful for that. Our group believes this. What does your group believe in? But once we remember that the purpose of religion is to love God, then everything becomes clear. We'll find a very insightful way to approach the religious confusion in Srimad Bhagavatam, which is the graduate study to Bhagavad Gita. I hope that many of you have read Bhagavad Gita or are starting to read Bhagavad Gita. You can read it at least from the viewpoint that it's one of the world's greatest classic literatures. You just read it with that attitude and keep an open mind, you'll benefit immensely. Bhagavad Gita, the song of the Supreme Opulent One, has a graduate study, the encyclopedic Srimad Bhagavatam. There it is stated the method by which you understand what is religion and what is the best religion. The statement is given. I will quote the Sanskrit. Not because I want to show off that I know some exotic language, but to show you that in Krishna consciousness, whatever we say is authorized. It's not that I'm making this up. We refer to the standard spiritual texts, just like a lawyer in court refers to the law books. Some people think that the more you make up your spiritual knowledge, the more advanced you are. New agey type persons, they're attracted to so-called spiritual teachers who claim that while they were tending their marigolds in the garden, suddenly a lightning bolt of enlightenment hit them. And so such self-styled teachers make so many imaginary pronouncements about how to proceed in spiritual life, even though they have no idea what the goal is. Our presentation to you tonight is based on the timeless spiritual knowledge associated with India, ancient India, but it is not bound, this knowledge is not bound to any particular geographic tract of land. Just like the sun rises in the east, but that doesn't mean the sun is the property of the east. The sun is for everyone. How many of you object when the sun comes over your head? You rose in the east. Get out of here. Anyone here do that? We don't want you because you rose in the east. You're not a South African sun. Anyone here object like that? No. You understand that although the sun has arisen in the east, the sun is for everyone. So let's look at the knowledge of Krishna in that way. Let's look at that knowledge of Krishna, the Krishna conscious knowledge given in Bhagavad Gita and its graduate study, Srimad Bhagavatam. Let's look at it in that way and not think it's bound to a certain ethnic group. In Srimad Bhagavatam, in Sanskrit, it is stated, Savaipum sam paro dharmo yato bhakti yatokshaje. Ahoituki aprityata yinatma supersedati. Religion is first class. It is super excellent when it produces ecstatic love of God. In order for that ecstatic love to be there, there must be no material motivation on behalf of the worshipper or the devotee. And that love must be uninterrupted. Let us discuss now. First of all, ecstatic love of God. You don't find ecstatic love in the material world, in material relationships. You can't, any of you, imagine saying to someone in this world, I have ecstatic love for you. Things don't get that intense on the material plane because the material plane is ruled by time and space. Time deteriorates things and space causes separation. So in material existence, you're always facing the corrosion caused by the time factor. What was fresh yesterday is stale today. And also, the material experience causes separation because of space. Separation between yourself and someone or something that's dear to you. So therefore, there can't be ecstatic love on the material plane. The material plane is dominated by matter, identification with matter as the self. That blunts and dulls any exhibition of the natural ecstasy of the soul. The natural ecstasy of the soul only comes out in relation to the Supreme Soul. Because we are missing our relationship with the Supreme Soul, we establish so many temporary relationships in this world, which are all based on the body. And because the body must collapse, that means the relationships must collapse. And generally, even before the body collapses, the relationships collapse. For there to be ecstatic love, there has to be freedom from time and space, freedom from matter. The real goal of religion is to cleanse the devotee, cleanse the spiritual practitioner of attachment for matter, and increase and intensify the devotee's attachment for the Supreme. The more that a religion is able to intensify the relationship between the devotee and the Supreme in ecstatic love, the more superlative that religion is. So just think, are you performing religion simply ritualistically, externally, officially? Just like often human relationships can be very external, very ritualistic. Or is our religious participation characterized by indeed ever-increasing love for God? That's actually what yoga is about. Many people have the misunderstanding that yoga is simply about physical postures and breathing exercises. In one sense, that's true, but only in a very preliminary sense. Yes, hatha yoga, the yoga of asanas or physical postures, is the best system of exercise known to human beings. But actually the real purpose of those yoga asanas, those yoga postures, is to help you have a peaceful mind so you can focus on the Supreme. But now what you see spread throughout the world is hatha yoga, physical yoga, without any relationship to its goal, which is to produce a peaceful mind for meditation on the ultimate goal of life. Whatever your spiritual practice, whatever your religion, you must see how your ecstatic love for God is increasing. It's not a question of social pressure. It's not a question of wanting to belong to a group or wanting to have some religious beliefs to make you feel safe in this world. No. It's all about relationship, and a relationship that produces constant increase in intensity. That is the experience of pure love of God. So please, go over your religious attempts in this life and see if the goal was to love God, or was the goal just to have a belief, to feel you belong to something, or to get material benefits for yourself. Often people approach God worship like an insurance policy. Well, in the just in case there is a God, you know, I've paid for my insurance policy. I've gone to the church or the temple or the mosque a few times, and just in case. So many people take up religion because of wanting prosperity. God give me this, God give me that. And what happens when the inevitable problems of material existence come about? Then everyone forgets God. They curse God. Why did you let this happen to me? Number one, you didn't give me the prosperity I wanted. And number two, you let disasters happen to me. What is the use of you? This confusion comes because we do not know what the goal of religion is, to love God. And that love is without material motivation. The Sanskrit says, ahetuki pratyata. No hetu. Sanskrit hetu means cause. No material cause. I want to love God. I want to serve God, worship God, because then I'll get this and I'll get that. No, no material motivation. You are simply serving the Supreme just for giving pleasure to the Supreme. Selfless love. Unconditional love. No conditions. Thus, my dear Lord, I am yours unconditionally. That is the kind of religion that produces ecstatic love. We all wish that someone would say that to us in material existence. I am yours unconditionally. Do whatever you like. Treat me however you like. I'm still yours. We feel that way because we are part of the Supreme. We're part of Krishna. That selfless love is first meant for the Supreme. It's meant for Krishna. And then you can properly love the parts of Krishna. But if you try to love the parts without loving the complete whole, the source of the parts, your procedure is faulty. How many persons can you try to love individually? How many persons do you know? In Sydney, Australia, recently, there was a man who stood in the busy section, commercial section of the city, and he had a sign, free hugs. Anyone who wants a hug, step right up. I'm the love man. And he estimated he was giving 1,500 hugs per day. The city council got upset, like they thought this is ruining our tourist image. They have this guy standing on the street with a big sign, free hugs, come and get it. So they tried to chase him off the streets, but then the locals put up a big resistance. Like, you know, what's wrong with someone standing on the street going and giving out free hugs? It's part of a free society. Free society, free hugs. Okay, he hugged 1,500 persons a day. Still, that's nothing compared to all the human beings in this world. And then the 6.3 billion human beings in this world are nothing compared to all the insects, all the animals, all the plant species. So our efforts to just love a few particles of the Supreme, our efforts are so inconsequential. We make a big deal out of trying to love one little creature. We make such a big deal out of it. And even that attempt to love one person is full of so many problems. Scientists study everything these days, and computers can calculate statistics so wonderfully. Do you know what the world average is for the duration of romantic feelings? That's been calculated. Like anthropological studies of all the cultures of the world. The world average for the duration of romantic feelings is 17 months. And after those 17 months, you're back on Earth again. But during those 17 months, your head is spinning. Because those romantic feelings wear off, then you no longer feel that your self-interest is being met. There's no buzz there anymore. And so, naturally, you blame the other person. You're not the same anymore. Yes, even in Indian families, it's happening these days. In India, they think they're missing something because they have a very strong traditional family structure. Although now, in Mumbai, the divorce rate is 50%. Still, for the most part, the family structure is quite strong compared to other places. But I remember I was giving a lecture in Mumbai at one of our centers there. And the topic was frustrated love. And thousands of people came. They thought, wow, this is the latest import from the West. Frustrated love. Let's check it out. We don't want to miss it. Newspaper reporters came. TV cameras came. Frustrated love. Let's hear about it. We don't want to miss it. We've got to be up with the times. Indeed, frustrated love is about the human experience. How our attempts to love are so bound by selfishness. Even the closest thing to unconditional love in this world is a mother's love for the child. But even that suffers when the child grows up and no longer is around. The mother then will diminish her feelings of attachment for her child, because the child's no longer around to give the mother nice feelings. And what to speak of other kinds of relationships? The male-female attempt at love is fraught with so many difficulties. High expectations. Recently, the UN spent $15 million researching marriage in the world and why marriage was falling apart in human society. And their conclusion was too high expectations. Each of the marriage participants had too high expectations of the other person. I've talked to many people around the world, and I mentioned this point about the UN $15 million study, and they all say the same thing. They could have just given me the $15 million. I could have told them that's the problem. So, because we are so frustrated with our attempts to love in this world that we forget or we don't understand that the real goal of religion is pure and perfect love. You first have to make your peace with the Supreme, and then you can make your peace with the parts of the Supreme. So this is the yoga approach. Yoga means to connect. First you connect to the Supreme. We call that Krishna consciousness, making that connection, becoming conscious of your loving relationship with the Supreme. And then you're able to exist properly with all the parts of the Supreme. In other words, water the tree at the root and all the branches blossom. Turn on the one switch that lights up everything, the master switch. But if you try to love each person individually, how many persons can you accommodate in your experience? And even those few persons that you can accommodate within the realm of your experience, the loving process is so faulty and has so many hiccups. So real yoga, known in Sanskrit as bhakti yoga, the yoga of pure love and devotion, or we say Krishna consciousness, real yoga means how to connect to the Supreme in pure, selfless love. Then only can there be ecstasy, ecstatic love, for that ecstatic love to proceed, there can't be any selfish reason, no material motivation, and no interruption. What causes the interruptions in our loving affairs? A material motivation. You didn't give me this, you didn't give me what I wanted, therefore I'm going to stop, I'm going to interrupt this loving exchange. Right? There's all sorts of business negotiations that go on. Okay, if you do this, then I'll do that. But remember, I did that, but you didn't do this. Right? Constant negotiations, arbitrations. Things brought up from 15 years ago, if you've been married a long time. 15 years ago, you did such and such. All this causes the interruption in the loving endeavor, because there's material motivation. You want something for yourself. You keep a scorecard. I did this for you, I did that for you, I did that for you, I did that for you. I never asked for anything. I'm so selfless. I did all these things for you. I didn't ask for anything then, but now the scorecard is full. What have you done for me lately? Sooner or later it comes up, right? Maybe it doesn't come up for 20 years, but it will come up. So many men and women in their middle ages who married in their 20s suddenly realize, I've been giving, 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 and what have I been getting? Yes, some of you here may have hit that phase. Middle age crisis. Ladies when they're 45 can often realize, it hits them, all my life I've been simply serving my husband and kids. I've neglected my own interests. I've got to do something for me now before old age comes. I may be 45, but I've still got some kick to me. Let me get out there and do something for me. Right? And the men start thinking, I've been such a dutiful husband, working hard, bringing home all the money, being the humble servant of the wife and children. Now I'm 45. I need a fling. So people can only go on selflessly for so long before they snap. And therefore, their so-called love becomes interrupted. But real love has no material motivation, and therefore, it has no interruption. Only that kind of love can completely satisfy the self. That is the verdict of Srimad Bhagavatam. Yenatma supersedeti, the Sanskrit says. Only in that way can the Atma, the pure self, be fully satisfied. The pure self can only be fully satisfied when there is pure love for the Supreme, without any material motivation, without any interruption. So we can look at any religious system and see, is the goal pure unconditional love of God? Selfless love of God? Can you see that in the followers? Or are they merely stamping themselves with a religious designation and making some official hymns, but in the substance of their life, you don't see any dynamic increase in their attraction and love for God. Still, you may say, well, all right, why then are there so many religions? Actually, religion is one, to understand what is God and to love God. But because people have different conditioning, there appear to be different religions. Just like looking at a mountain from different angles and different degrees of closeness. Some only see a dark mass up ahead. Others who are closer can see the vegetation on the mountain. Others who are even closer can see the human activity on the mountain. that same Supreme seen from different vantage points means that there are different religions. And when people forget about the goal of religion, to love God, they fight over their religious beliefs. So if you want a means to sift through all the human religious endeavors, look for that religion which produces ecstatic love of God, because there's no material motivation and therefore no interruption. Obviously, the more you know about God, the more you can love God. So therefore, that spiritual system that gives you the most comprehensive knowledge of the Supreme allows for the greatest love. Even in material relationships, our puny material relationships, people say, to know the person is to love the person. How many of you, in the ordinary sense of the word love, have fallen in love with a stranger? If I'm walking with you on the street, and suddenly you point to someone in the crowd and say, see that person? I love him. I love her. What would my first question be? Well, how long have you known the person? And you say, oh, I know nothing about the person except I love that person. Obviously, I wouldn't take it very seriously, because it's a common understanding that love is based on knowledge of the person. That means love is based on attraction. And to know the person means to know qualities and activities that attract you. Similarly, for there to be ecstatic, dynamic love of God, you must have knowledge of God. How you are attracted. So there are different degrees of knowledge of God. The more your knowledge of God is, the deeper your knowledge of God is, the more your love of God will be there. Because the Supreme is all attractive. That's what the name Krishna means. The one who can attract everything in a dynamic relationship of ecstatic love. Ecstatic love of God means ecstatic pleasure. The material experience cannot give you the satisfying pleasure you want. You've tried, all of you. And unless you get higher knowledge, you'll try again in your next life. No matter what species, no matter what type of body you have in your next birth, you'll try again. Until you finally get knowledge, get understanding, that your loving propensity is meant for the Supreme. You want to feel attraction for the Supreme. That is Krishna consciousness. So it's not that this religion is wrong and that religion's right. There are different levels of comprehensiveness in your understanding. That means there are different levels of intensity of attraction. Just like, let's say I'm walking on the street and I see this person here. I say, hey man, am I wrong? What would you say? Am I wrong?
Oh, no.
But you would immediately think, well, you don't know him that well. Hey man. So I'm correct, but obviously my addressing him shows I don't have much familiarity with him, not much knowledge. There's not much of a relationship. So if you just say, oh God, it's the same thing. A generic term that doesn't show much understanding. Better than nothing, Better I say, hey, man, than just ignore him. Hey, it. I'm like, hey, whatever. How does that make you feel? Hey, whatever. But some people think spirituality's like that. The supreme whatever. You would like to be addressed that way. And how much ecstatic love can there be in such a relationship? Oh, whatever. Thank you for the daily bread. You would start to think, what am I, the great baker or something? But of course, better to thank you for the daily bread than nothing at all. Hey, whatever, thank you for the daily bread. It doesn't show much of a personal relationship. And it also shows some material motivation, because you're giving me something. We want to thank you. And if you don't give me anything, watch out. That's implicit in treating God as our order supplier. Now, if I know his name, which I just found out today upon meeting him today, if I know his activities, if I know his personal qualities, obviously there can be more love. Because love is based on attraction. Sometimes people say, right, God is love. Yes? Do you know what that really means beyond a slogan? When you say God is love, that means God is all attractive. So then you must know, what is it about God that attracts everyone and everything? Without that knowledge, how can there be ecstatic love? So the more you understand the science of God, the more your love can increase. To accept that there is a supreme controller is better than nothing at all. But you want to strive for a much deeper relationship and much deeper knowledge of the supreme. Therefore, your quest in this human form of life, with its developed consciousness, your quest should be to get the most comprehensive, in-depth knowledge of God possible. That's your responsibility. If I just say, hey man, and leave it at that, does that show I'm really interested in it? Now, if I was really interested, I would find out all about him. So there are different religions giving different levels of understanding God. Something is better than nothing, but if you want ecstatic love, you need the most comprehensive, in-depth knowledge of God. So at the Free State University, I was today explaining that if you look into the subject matter, you'll find that Krishna consciousness is the most comprehensive system of spiritual understanding in the world. It doesn't mean other systems are wrong, but there's just different depths, different levels. And the deepest levels produce the deepest ecstatic love for God. So please think deeply about this. And don't be bewildered that there's this religion, that religion. Understand what is the goal, to love God, and then understand your responsibility as a human being with advanced consciousness. Your responsibility is to find the deepest knowledge of God. Then there can be the deepest love. And when there's the deepest love, there won't be material motivation. There'll just be love for love's sake. That is what Krishna consciousness is all about. What are the problems affecting religious experience today? Spiritual experience? Number one, inability to get out of the bodily concept of life. And number two, lack of knowledge of what is God. How many churches, how many mosques, temples, synagogues do you go to and you hear a lecture about how you are not the body, you are pure spirit soul, part of the supreme soul. You don't hear it because people are confused and the religious leaders are confused. Are we this body or are we not? What is it about us that's spiritual? Maybe we're both body and spirit. So much speculation, and therefore their followers remain trapped in the illusion of thinking we are this body, the body is the self. As long as you think like that, there can be no genuine spiritual experience. So the religious leaders are not giving the people the proper preliminary information, what to speak of, advanced information. Religion just becomes a matter of social identification. What do you believe? Well, I believe this. You believe that. We're in different groups. That's the first problem. Misidentification of the self as material and religious leaders not providing any clear distinction between matter and spirit, the spirit self and the material illusion. The second problem we spoke about is lack of deep knowledge of what is God. Just like, for example, Jesus Christ, topmost yogi. That means topmost connector with the Supreme. He always referred to his father, but he gave very little information about his father. Because the people he was speaking to, they couldn't handle anything more. And he even said that according to the Bible. Jesus told his followers, there are many things I long to tell you that your ears cannot possibly bear to hear. In other words, you're not advanced enough. He referred to his father, in my father's house. I and the father are one. That means we are of the same quality. Like the particle of sunlight is of the same quality as the sun. Because there are different levels of people in this world, there are different levels of spiritual understanding, but it's your responsibility as a human being to get the deepest level possible. Then there can be the deepest love. So I hope that I've given some clarity on this often confusing situation. Why so many religions? This religion says this, that religion says that. You have to know what the goal of religion is. Once you understand the goal, then we're able to make a proper picture of the situation. Another reason why there's spiritual confusion is because people are attached to animal slaughter. As long as there's no mercy for the poor, innocent creatures, there'll be no mercy for us in terms of being able to understand what is God. Animals are less intelligent, but suppose you have someone born in your family who has a mental handicap. Do you cut the person up and eat him? Because the person's mentally slow, mentally retarded? So similarly, animals are less intelligent. Anyone who has a pet or who's lived on a farm can see that. But they are conscious entities. So when human beings slaughter animals for the satisfaction of their tongue, there's no way they're going to be able to understand clearly what is religion. Because there's no mercy. There's just cruelty. It's not necessary, other than in very extreme situations where there's nothing else to eat, it's not necessary for human beings to eat animals. It destroys their health. It destroys the environment, yet they continue because of being bloodthirsty. Cruel. So if you want to see a massive increase in humanity's ability to understand what is God, what is real religion, then the animal slaughter has to be stopped. As soon as that's stopped, you'll see people's health increase, as scientists will easily tell you. You'll see the environmental problems decrease, as scientists will easily tell you. And, as any Krishna conscious person will easily tell you, you'll see a greater capacity in people for understanding the science of the Supreme.